we're talking about the way in which babies are born the last time. And what I'd like to know first is, what were children told, or what are children told, about where a baby comes from? Or are children present during birth? Were they present during birth?
I've never known a child to be present during birth. Never.
So then you have to give them some explanation of how the new person
comes. Yeah, well, when I had Joey, when I had Lorna, and Jeffrey was 2 years old, but you know, I guess he didn't ask. He didn't ask. Of course, the older children are slower in learning to speak, you know, and the younger ones, well, I can take Troy now, and he'll ask me questions that Jeffrey never asked me when he was 2 years old. But when I had Joey, and Jeffrey was all curious, where'd you get him from, Mama? Where'd you get him from? And they knew the nurse, the police had brought the nurse down to to our tent. And then my mom says, he wouldn't leave me. You go down to with your granny to the other tent. My mom had another tent, you see, and she was staying with me at the time. Colin was in hospital. Jeffrey says, no. He doesn't want to leave me. Then why you're going to go? Why am I going to go? Because your mom is going to have a brand new baby. And from where it's going to come? He says, well, the nurse is going to bring it after a while, and you mustn't be here when they're bringing it. But I never really, well, of course, I've had straight boys, so I never told them very much. But Lorna, she's only 11 years old. Certainly in a couple of years I'll explain things to her, but I don't think I should right now.
So she must have been puzzled, say, when Ricky came.
Yeah, well, they all think that he came from the hospital. They all thought that I bought him from the hospital. And again, when Eddie was born, he was born in the tent, but they all thought, at the time, plane flew over our tent, and my mom was outside just shortly before this, you know, and then he made up his own mind. He says, the first time Joey, the police car brought Joey. The second time, the plane just dropped Eddie over. And then all the rest, they think we buy them from hospital. I don't know what really, us children, we never, I mean, thinking back of myself, I never thought of where children came from. I did know that they have babies, but I can't recall if I ever had any thoughts about where babies came from. That's why I never thought anything. Like I told you, when I was going to have Jeffrey, I didn't think for 1 minute how he's going to be born. I didn't know anything. I didn't know how they were born.
Did you not know how he was conceived?
I know that he was conceived, but I didn't know how he's going to be born, and that's honest to goodness.
How did you manage to get out, huh?
Yeah, well, then, you see, Bessie came just minutes before he was born, and in that brief time, she explained a whole lot to me, as much as I could take. She told me how to expect it to be born, and she told me she explained about bearing down and everything. I didn't know this. And then she just really, nobody ever explained this to me. I don't know, other people might have, but I've never been told.
People have a fiction about storks and stuff. There's nothing like that in Eskimo folklore.
Well, I don't know, maybe they have, but I don't know anything about it.
Well, could you tell us something about the care of the infant immediately after it's born? Does it receive feeding right away from the breast or some period of time?
Well, after they clean it, of course, I know in hospital, when I had Jeffrey, they waited at least 12 to 16 hours or so before feeding. It depended on how much mucus was coming out of it or if it was, you know, vomiting mucus few hours later, and then after they thought it was cleared up, I guess then they let us feed them, anyway, a good 12 hours. But I know at home, when Lorna couldn't stop crying, and my father-in-law says, about 2 hours later, the baby's hungry, feed it. I says, no, I won't feed it. Not now. And no matter how much he got after me for it, I wouldn't feed it, you know. And then about 5 hours went by and she's still crying, you know, just cranky sort of. And so I got Colin to put boiling water in a bottle, and I put a little syrup to it, just straight water, it's glucose sort of, you know, and then boil it, and I gave it to her after it cooled off. And but I know natives can feed their baby shortly after birth. That means if my father-in-law tell me this, then they could feed them right after birth.
Sure.
And
that's how it must have been in the olden days.
Sure, they feed them right after birth. That's why he told me this. Otherwise, he wouldn't have. And when I told him no, I says, in the hospital, they never let me feed my baby for 12 hours or so. And he says, well, natives don't go by hours. He says, you feed them right after they're born if they want to eat.
That means that the baby gets colostrum as well as milk.
Yeah. And even like Jeffrey, I noticed their stool. When Lorna had her stool after she was born, I just about crawled out of my skin. I was so scared. I never seen this happen, never. I've never been around small wee ones that were born in my life. And I never seen Jeffrey to do this because the nurses were taking care of him. And when Lorna had this, I just made Colin run fast as he could to get my father-in-law to come. And I noticed some, even then he explained it to me, and he said I should use something to, you know, that I could throw away. And I know I even, the first one, well, I thought, gee, I'm not going to go throwing a nice new diaper away. So I had a cloth to throw away in with a diaper, and then I just threw that out, but there was still some that had gotten on the diaper. And I washed that, and boy, the water was so slimy, you know, just wouldn't wash. And then afterwards, then I started using something that I'd throw away until she got clear of it. But about diapers and stool, I noticed white people, they always have a diaper pail. They always put it in a pail of water, you know. But Eskimo will always never do that. Maybe very few that have been working in a hospital or with white people may do this now. I don't know, but I never came across a native that did this, including myself. As soon as more people, my aunt was very clean when she was late long earlier. She and my mom, she'd always take a diaper, and if they had stool on it, she'd always have a can, you know, with any can with a lid that's opened real cleanly with a opener, then that's got a sharp edge, but not sharp enough to cut. Then they scrape the stool off the diaper, then they throw it in the honey bucket. But white people, they throw it in the diaper pail and then leave it. And it's real smelly, and this other way, it's just easy. Of course, after I take the stool off, I put them in water with perfect. But this is something different about the natives. They never scrape, they never leave stool in a diaper. Some of them, I mean, they pile the stool, they pile diapers, you know, just pile them until it's time to wash. And then when it's time to wash, they scrape them. This could be a day old, and that could put a smell to it. But I was brought up and taught to scrape right after the baby had the stool, after I take the diaper off. So I always did this with mine. And I've seen my mother-in-law when Lorna was just about 3 or 4 months old, 2 months old. We don't go into town often then, and we don't, I never fed none of my baby's baby food till I had Ricky, his canned baby food. That's the fifth child. I fed them all. Well, my mother-in-law, she scared me because when Lorna was just about 3 months old, and the natives, they don't spoon food into their mouth. I do, but not my mother-in-law's age. they later after they get older they will, but most of the time if they're if they're feeding them soup, they give it to them. But I always notice a native too. Always she has to try, feel to see if it's just the right warmth, I guess, or
that's
something. Mm-hmm. And if they're eating meat or hard bread or something, they always chew it and then feed it from their mouth. And I've seen them chewing anything, you know, that anything that's on the table, what a native will eat, they start the baby off with any food that they eat.
Free chew.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, they have to, because they don't even have teeth yet when they start feeding them. And but all native children I've seen, my children too, you can stick a piece of bread in their mouth and they can keep quiet from less until that bread is gone. I don't know if they get it all in, but I sure see a lot of crumbs later.
How about before bread?
Before bread, with the older ones, I always cooked cereal for them. I always cooked, my children were not pablum eaters. They didn't like pablum. I always cooked oats, cream of wheat and rice, but on table like potatoes and vegetables, I squash it along with a spoon, you know, the vegetables, I squash it with a spoon and I feed them, but we eat off the table. I never was one to feed my children solid meat, but liver, I always squash that with a spoon also and fed it to them. But
and that's something for them to just chew on, like that piece of bread.
Sure, they can. You can give them meat. My mother was telling me when I was small, they used to let me suck oxorach. Oxorach means these long strips of whale blubber that's stuck in the whale oil. You know, when you're cutting, in order to get whale oil, you get the blubber off whale, and then you have to cut it in strips. You seen that?
Yes.
Muktuk is in big square piece, but then the blubber has to be cut in strips, one cut this side, one cut that side, and then mostly always in two, you know, like two strips, yeah. But they don't hang these ones. They put them all in a barrel, joined together, and they put them all in a barrel, and then, you know, the heat gets at them, and then the oil oozes out, and then that oil comes up high. And then this has got no real oil in it. It's sort of, it's fleshy. They call that okshogach. My mother said that long ago, these children, when I was small, I guess, and before me and even after me, they have a piece of stick. Some, she said, match stick. Although I don't know how the baby's got a big mouth when they cry. But she said she had a stick, you know, not sharp and yet just rounded, just for this. One side got a little end to it that will go through the oxoa. It's not tough, anything will go through it. But, and yet it's muscly enough that you wouldn't suck it in chunks. It won't break, and it'll just wear out until it's just like a sinew. She said that every time I was cranky and she was busy, she'd cut a piece of okshogach and stick this stick in it, and I'd put it in my mouth. And I was small. I must have never could hold, or even if I could hold it, then it could have went in, because they're very slippery things. So she said, this stick is against me like this, you see? No matter.
It's like a pacifier.
Yeah, sure. And no matter which way it went, it wouldn't go in my mouth. And that okshogach was in my mouth, and I was always sucking on it. And this went for children, I suppose, that went through all Kagmaliks, because this was in Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe so amongst the, I heard this amongst the Nunatamiochs. And I know Nunatamiochs too, along with even myself, when I was small, Mom said another thing she used was some meat, some hard boiled meat. I mean, you know, hard meat that wouldn't get chunky. They put this in also.
Mm-hmm.
And fat. Dunnock, they call it, this fat off the top of, you know, well, like beef or caribou or reindeer.
Unrendered?
Yeah.
Unrendered?
No. Just unrendered. They got a big piece, you know, they from the top, they're fat. They cut a strip of it or a big piece of it, and then we could always suck on this also.
Did they also put that through
through that stick?
Mm-hmm.
But I know maybe this, I don't know how, we must have had strong stomachs for that.
I don't see many children using pacifiers now that I think of it.
Yeah.
I never have one for mine.
I don't think I've seen any here.
Not the younger ones. I've seen them in the bay.
And I don't even see kids much carrying bottles around.
Walking around with bottles in their
hands. Well, yeah, well, my mother said they used to go to, some children used to go to school or my granddad told me about this in Herschel Island. I think he said he went to school for a while. My granddad was telling me, and he had no mother, so he couldn't do this. He said, although he thought if he had a mother, he would. These children would go to, he said, all he learned was ABC, forwards and backwards. That's all he learned. And all these big boys, 14, 16-year-old boys, would go to this little school, and then they'd all race out, and the boys would all rush for their mothers and just grab their mother, and they want a mama, you know? They're sucking from their mother yet. And I was asking Ruthie Polk, my cousin, if they still did this. She says, yes. She says, quite a few big kids still do this. I asked her.
Surely not 14, 15 years
old. Well, I asked her this, 14, 15 years old. She says, no, but about 8 and 9 years old. And I never seen Nunatarmers do this, but I've seen them feeding, nursing 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds. I've seen them nursing them. My sister-in-law, Lily, her little boy was about 4 years old, and he's a real rowdy little boy, real tough punk. He'd play outside and he can out-wrestle his older sister, you know, and real rough, and talks 60 miles an hour, and then he comes in and says, "Man, I'm hungry," he says, and he wrestles his mother for her breast.
He has no younger sibling.
No. But he wrestles his mother, and I've asked Lily, why do you do this to him? She says, well, I tried to stop him, she says, but he won't. But this is the favorite expression amongst a lot of natives. If you ask them, why do you let your children do this? I'm very curious, and I always ask them. And they says, I try to, but I can't. They always say this. I ask my mother, why do you let Herman get away with staying up so late, and why do you let him get away with just his own way all the time? I try, but I can't. I said, you sure could. If you could with us, I'm sure you could with Herman. You know, this is the same way with my aunt. All her children argue with her. All of them, from this 16-year-old Carter right down to the little one, they swear at their mother. Their mother says, get a bucket of water for me, please, Carter. No, you let Georgina know, Barbara, no, Shirley, no, this, no, that. They all call their mother, and Annie has to shut up because she can't bug all her children. And I says, why do you let them do that to you, Annie? Well, I try to stop them, but I can't. I says, you certainly stopped me when I argued back at you, or if I wanted to have my way. She did. She had a stick on me if I did. I mean, she wasn't mean to me, but she wanted me to know the right way.
Well, where is the stick nowadays?
Well, that's what I asked her. Where is it? Where's the willow? And when I'm there, you see those children, if there's a table of dirty dishes in there, and I walk in and I says, where's all the girls around this joint? And not one beep out of them, they all go do their work, you know. Two girls to the dishes and one to the floor and one doing something else. They're scared of me.
What?
They all love me very much. They really think the world of me. But they take my word.
How do you manage?
Because when I go in there and I hear them talk back to their mother, I just get a stick and I do the job for her. And that's true. Not one of my brothers or my cousins speak back to me. If they do it, I really get the stick at them.
How do you explain the fact that she's changed?
I don't know. This is one thing I can't figure out. She's very much changed. She used to be a woman that says, my children will not put one foot. She trained Jeffrey this way. I mean, she taught me to do this to Jeffrey. Will not set one foot on the floor without a sock. That's ridiculous to step on the floor without a sock. That's a lazy mother. And no dirt. I never see a little dirt on any of the children, older children's faces. All the children have real well-made clothes, all handmade, homemade. mostly sewn by her hand because she wanted to do a good job on it. And nobody drinking with a little smell in the mouth is allowed a foot by her door. Mm. And now she's right into the bottom of the barrel.
And you can't figure out
I
why?
I can't figure out why. Well, a lot of these women, I say that they start drinking is because their husband drinks so much that they think, well, I might as well start. John drank, but he knows how to handle his drink real good. I've always been real proud of him. He can drink, but you can never tell if he's drinking or not. But I don't know why. Why now he's, it gets so bad now that he's got his wife black and blue whenever he can lay his hands on her. And he was never a man for this. I bet you about 3 times out of the week she's not sleeping home. She camps over at my house sometimes. But she never come for a long time because I always jump on to her next morning. And then she's always sleeping at my mom's house.
What about the children when
she just
camps
leaves
out?
Them. John wouldn't let her take. Sometimes she takes them all. Sometimes they all go with her mother. That's the sad part of it. The winter time, well, it was March. It's still winter. You know, it was very warm out, very warm wind, and I was going home from bingo, and I dropped in my mom's house, and all these children were there, and Clara's going to take them back home, because then they're all scattered, no blankets, no decent place to sleep. She's going to take some of them home, and then we started looking for jackets with them, and she was crying. You know, she pitied her brothers and sisters so much, Clara, her little girl, and she was dressing them up crying, so I... Colin told me, you go ahead and help her, and we'll carry Johnny, I think he said it was home. One of Annie's youngest, one her own youngest. And we were looking, and then Alex says, what you looking for? Jack says, well, you don't have to look for them. He says, because they came without anything on. Mm-hmm. Just their little t-shirts and their pants. And a couple of them had no shoes. The girls had carried them. I mean,
yeah.
I can't explain why she's changed. And the same thing with my mom. It's drink. But why did they turn to it? You see, it all leads back to drinking. They started drinking. It all, I blame it on drinking anyway. That's the best way I could explain it is they started drinking. And then it got so they'd had a little bit, and then they had more and more and more, and they never ever learned to control themselves when they're drinking. They don't know how to handle their drinks. They think, I've seen Eskimos that I don't like to say anything about, I don't like to say anything bad about them, but I see it, that I've told my father-in-law and my husband, why do they do that? They get a paycheck, $100-something or maybe $200-something. Let's go and get drunk. I got my paycheck. So they go to the bar or they go to Hudson Bay. Well, this is one thing I talked to Bertha and some other natives about. They don't know how to budget.
How to budget?
They go in a bar and they don't even price things. They just wheel their cart. If some of them, they're lucky, they do this. They buy stuff first. And then most of them don't too. And they're not. You think if they drank $20 a night, that was lots. But no, that's not enough. So they have to. Maybe they got liquor at home. They have their booze at home, but they have to go to the bar. And then they says, "Come on, I'll buy you a drink. Come on." Then they end up buying everybody drinks, and then maybe they could spend $80. I've seen them do this. I've seen them spend $80, $60, $40 a night drinking. They don't think. They think once they get this big check, they're rich, but they don't know how to put it away, or they don't, you know, they think there's lots more where it comes from. But then Annie started drinking. I mean, I think this is why, but she said, I get so tired of John sitting in a bar every night, night after night. One of these days I'm going to go in and just get myself drunk. I'd have done that sooner, but I can't keep it down my stomach, she always says. But she sure can keep it down now. I suppose she got herself used to it, you know. Maybe she couldn't stand much at the beginning, and then she took little more. And but she certainly changed about food factor, the children eating food. Well, my mom said that they had, well, I had diapers. She said they had trunks with bundles of rolls of cloth and flannel that my granddad used to order in. So they had material in those days. Maybe some didn't, but some had. My mom said they had so much that when their mother first died, that they cut out a dress, and you know, the foolish young mind, they cut it out just to fit theirself, and then found they couldn't get into it. So they had to make it over for a smaller child. My mom said to save things, even though they had plenty in those days, those flour sacks, sugar sacks, she never threw them away. She said she washed them real good. She did a real good wash on them and hung them out and let them air out and get pretty white. And then she'd make dresses for me or shirts for me out of them. Same with Eva and my brother Alec. She made clothes for us out of them, and she had trunk loads of material. And then about she said, though, that, and my father-in-law said this, I never asked, though, my father-in-law if any of his children ever used this, because his oldest children are quite old now. If his children were born in the days that they used moss for diapers, this is something I'll have to ask him. But this is something he said, I asked him, when babies were born long ago, I said, what did you use for diapers? And he said that a lot of them, these deer skins, they cut them in square pieces, you know, and they just have the baby over them. And I said, well, and then how'd you clean them? They said they had that, and they had moss or, some sort of moss. They had this, and I said, boy, you must have had a lot of moss picking to do then. He says, no. He says, sure, every once in a while we pick new supply, he says, but a lot of time this supply lasted for a long time, because if they dirtied it, they can rinse it in water.
Yeah. Moss.
They can rinse it in water, and then I guess they must have get a big fruity one or something that, and I said, well, this is not the stool. The stool ones, of course, they throw away. But he said they can just rinse it in water, or a lot of times they just take it after it's wet and they put it outside. The sun dries it, and then they use it over. They can use moss over a few times. And I never understood how they could do it. And the same with deerskin. When I had Lorna and we were in a reindeer herd, some of these natives, if their children happened to wet the bed on a deerskin, you know, they take it out, and they, you know, hard crust of snow. They take this deerskin out and they shake it in this crusty snow, and shake it. It dries in the winter time. This, instead of freezing it, it dries it. They say they rub it
on the hard snow.
On the hard snow, and it dries.
Did you ever hear of a remedy for bedwetting?
I never heard.
Can you tell us about wrapping the newborn baby?
Well, I don't know what they'd use in a newborn baby, but, well, I told you Colin was wrapped in a rabbit skin. Maybe they,
no,
I wonder if they might have, I don't know what they would do in those days, but
don't they still wrap rather tightly around?
I don't.
With blankets.
I don't know if they did that.
But how about now?
No.
When the baby's home from
the hospital? Baby's home from hospital. Well, when the baby is born in the hospital, I see them just, well, they get it there. And they says, a little baby, and they tell us what it is, and then they weigh it right away, and then they just put it, I never seen it tightly wrapped. Just a loose receiving blanket.
Yeah, fold it up like an envelope.
Yeah, but not tight, it's just loose.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had my children at home, I did the same way with them. I never, but then right after their bath, my mom was a fast sewer. This is something the Eskimos also don't believe in, is if you're pregnant, and doesn't matter if it's your first or your 15th, never prepare for it until after birth. They think that if you prepare for it so well, my auntie believes this very much because it happened to her, she says, that if you prepare everything and make little clothes for it, whether it's in different colors or if you get everything all ready for it, prepare for the baby, that when it's born you're all ready to receive it. They don't believe in this. They think you shouldn't. It's against all Eskimo rule to do this. Because I don't know how people feel about this now, but I won't.
Mm.
I won't get ready for the baby, because my auntie talked this into my head ever since I was a youngster. I was taught this that the baby would die. It would be born dead, or maybe a few months later it would die. A baby you got all ready for never lived. This is their belief.
Yes.
I don't believe this, but still I wouldn't get ready for it.
Take any chance.
No. And I know when my aunt had been pregnant with her oldest child out of wedlock, she had everything. She had clothes enough to last that kid for a couple of years, maybe 3 or 4 years. She had clothes made all out. She had a deerskin parka, a foxskin parka, and stroud parka, whatnot, talk about it all. And she had all the inside clothes. She had little pants made and dresses galore with frills. And the baby only lived for 4 months. And so this happened to her. So ever since I was growing up, she'd never do that. You don't do that. Just think, if I only hadn't prepared for that baby, now he would have been a grown-up boy. This is what she believes.
Is there any idea that praising a newborn baby is also dangerous? Praising him too much, or being too pleased with him, or anything like that?
They don't think in this, but I do know they always say not to put thoughts ahead, or not to think of the future. Don't say, if this boy grows up, he's going to be so and so. They don't like to think of these mm-hmm. things. But it's not a real something that's so strict on it that they won't say it every so often.
Yeah.
But I can say this because I've never been taught to be afraid of this. But I've been taught to be afraid of preparing for a baby. And when I read books about this woman that's expecting, getting all their basements and everything so far ahead of time, and then it never ceases to cross my mind, what would they think if they knew the Eskimo would not get not even 1 yard of flannel?
Well, it sometimes puzzles some of the nurses.
Mm-hmm. Well, this often never fails. It always comes across my mind. If they knew the natives' beliefs, what would they think, you know?
I think they'd understand it then. I think it's because they don't know the natives'
mm-hmm.
beliefs that they're puzzled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And nobody's questioned me about it. They never say anything. A lot of things I read about white people, lots of things I've read, I never tell Colin or anybody why I want to tell them. I want to tell them, but you know, if I have to tell them, I'll have to tell them about it for about 2 days, explaining and telling them about it before they understood something. Sometimes something will come across my mind that I'll tell you what I mean. New way they got of giving injections to a woman that she'll get pregnant, causing them to have maybe 5 or 6 children, you know? More than 2 multiple births giving this woman. I think they give them a needle, and they can give them a pill also, and they can inject something in them, give them something, the woman. You never read it? I read it. I heard it on news, and I read it. That's why. They don't know how much this little spoon can hold. They don't know that these natives wouldn't understand if you told them that this little teaspoon that holds can hold 1/3 of it, can maybe have boys, and 3/4 of it girls. And that's why it causes them to have more chance of them having girls. and that only one out of that can be conceived, or maybe two out of it. But this other way they're doing it now is they put this in the woman, and then they don't know how much goes in the woman. They don't know how much goes in the little sperm. Don't know how much it goes in the woman. It's always a chance. It's always more than two. And if you get two, you're lucky. I want to tell this to some woman when I read it. It's so interesting. I want to tell it to some of my girlfriends. But I don't want to go explaining it. And then they're going to tell some other woman, and she'll come and says, hey, I heard you read about this. How does it go? And then this can go on forever. And if I didn't have no time for work, or I could just have to sit at home, I'd have to tell. I mean, I would tell them.
Do you think that women would be interested in such information?
They would. I think they would very much be. Sometimes it crosses my mind to tell Colin about something like this. I tell him now, he understands quite easily, because a lot of times I read it out to him first and then I tell it to him. But it's so hard, you know. It's, you have to have the time for it, and I don't have all that time for them. And if I weren't so busy all the time, I'd sure be glad to tell them, because and then I read a book, and it's so good that I just have to tell somebody. Sometimes I just can't hold it back.
You mean a novel?
Yeah.
Story?
Mm-hmm. A lot of times, though, you know, the person I can talk to is my Uncle Donald. Mm-hmm. He understands a lot of these things because he reads a lot also. And a lot of times he come across things that he doesn't dare tell about, because then it's going to take a week to explain them.
He too. Same experience with you.
Yes. Because he, of course, you learn more by reading. You can understand a lot of things from reading. You can learn things that you don't hear on the news or from around people from reading. What's going on today?
Books?
I buy them from the Bay. Mostly from the Bay. That's where I had all
you
the books.
You don't go to the
library? Well, never. I never have the time for that.
Variety.
I know I took a few books from there, but I've never been able to go back there since I took the 6 to 9 work. Never. And my children could pick one for me, but then they may never pick the one I like. But I've been there a few times. Never I could get the time. And now I haven't been there for about 3 weeks, I think it is.
Did you ever hear of shaping a baby's head after it's born, if it's to, so it's got a good form?
I never heard of them shaping it, but I heard that it could be unshaped.
You mean it's got a bad shape?
It's got a bad shape.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot of these natives believe that, well, they say that when a baby's inside the mother, the head is very big, and then just before birth it goes over. And then it's born. And then someplace like where this is,
mm-hmm.
that they call it, they say that's the breathing part. They say when it was in the mother, that's where it gets its oxygen from. They say it breathes through there.
Mm-hmm.
And they know it's very delicate and they're very careful with it, you know. But then I've heard my father-in-law mention where that if right after the baby is born and the head is not in good shape, then you could press it, not very hard, but softly, just softly, if you could, never force, and if it just will fit, and if you just hold it one way a little bit, then it might get on.
Mm-hmm.
But he says some children, though, they got harder bone than some of them. I heard this, but not too much about it.
So your father-in-law knew this custom already?
Yeah, and I asked him if he'd done this, you know. I asked him if he ever shaped anybody's head.
Yeah.
He says no, because I was curious to know who had a head shaped by my father-in-law, but he said no, he didn't. But I've heard, though, the stories. And my father-in-law believes in them very much, and natives believe in them very much. Then what they believe in, they're not afraid of the baby in most cases. They think the baby, well, it's going to be born, and it has to be born, no matter what. But they're very scared of the afterbirth. They say the afterbirth has to be handled very carefully.
For what reason?
They believe that if the afterbirth is not born right after, well, you know, within 15 minutes or so after the baby is born, that it gets hard and it goes back and it gets so big. They believe that it can grow teeth on it. Or they say, I don't really know how to explain it, but I heard my father-in-law say, "Kigutinigaktot." That means it grows teeth. They say it's bad, it gets so hard in there that it can't come out anymore, it gets hard and it'll kill the mother. And they're very scared of this. They say that my father-in-law's seen a few cases like this. They maybe they think it turns into a monster or something inside. A lot of times I've asked my husband, do you understand what your father means about that thing? It's too bad that I really can't make out what my father-in-law says all the time. You know, I mean, I understand him pretty well. We click pretty well. But in some things like this, when he talks about, sometimes you know how you feel if you're going to have to ask somebody over and over. They begin to get kind of cranky, or maybe they think he's curious. And my father-in-law always says, Tuck people are very nice people, but boy, curious and can ask questions. So I've always watched myself because I come from there, you see. I mean, I'm Sigler.
Is that not so good to ask questions and be curious?
Well, I don't know, but some people don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
The Tuck people like to say that they're too curious. They ask too many questions. And then the Dharmyoks like to say the same thing about them. Neither one like to be said are curious, but like I said, I wouldn't take side of either one. But I've noticed Tuck girls come up, or if I happen to come across an old girlfriend or maybe somebody that's not a girlfriend, everybody seems like they're very good in, you know, coming from the same place. They're very glad to see each other. Tuck people come here and I might not know them very good. They know I'm Singlich from back.
Yeah.
So they're very, you know, outgoing to me, very friendly. And they says, "Kanga kaibit, nakin kaibit, sumit kala." They fire their questions without getting answers. And then you have to answer them all very nicely and remember what they'd ask you.
We think that the Baffin Island Eskimo don't want to be bothered with questions. And if you ask them too many questions, you'll get the atchuk.
Yeah, well, sometimes I come across some Eskimos even here like this. I ask questions kind of in my anyway. That's why I always be very careful. I live amongst them, but I come across some natives that say, I definitely know that they know the answer. They know the answer. And then I say, how'd that happen? I don't know. Achu? They say achu. Well, achu is an unatame word, we figure. Achuki, they always say. Achuki.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know means achuki. But short for achuki, they say achu.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, Dorcas Allen will use that. Alaskan, we know it as an Alaskan word. It comes back really originally from Alaska.
Well,
achu.
Yeah.
That's what they say. Yeah, well, this is what they... This Nunatamers will where that word Achiki comes from. You sound like they say, I mean, you know, you ask them, they ask you, you say, Achu, well, since when did you become an Alaskan? Or they'll give you a remark like that.
It's
you
not Nunatamers,
Achu? I don't think it really is Nunatamers. I think originally they heard it or they got it from Alaskan people. That's why they think it's an Alaskan word.
In Red Whale River, they say Achuli. Which is like you're a chupi,
uh-huh.
With an L instead of a K.
But that's why I never, like, sometimes maybe I go one question over my father-in-law, he says, Suwami? Nalugika? That means I don't know. Well, Nalugika means I don't know. And Suwami means it's almost the same word. There's so many words that's almost the same and you can't explain a real good English word for them. Well, it's something like, Subami means I'm not sure. The closest I could come to it is I'm not sure. I don't know. But so then I know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can tell when my father-in-law is in a talking mood, then I can really talk
to him. Let me, can I go back to wrapping the baby?
Yeah.
When you just put the receiving blanket over the baby, or people, do they straighten the legs or the arms?
Well, I guess they would put it as comfortable as it could get. The legs are, you mean, do they leave them folded or do they just straighten them right out? No, I never come across in what they do with them. I just, whether mine is curled up or not, I just leave them the way they are. But, now where did, I was telling you about the afterbirth. Well, that's the only thing they're scared of. They don't mind the baby right away, you see. After the baby's born, they're more concerned about that afterbirth. More. But anyway, the baby, I don't know what they would dress it long ago. But us, like my time, well, we had everything. We had all the clothes for it. They gave me a big supply of clothes for Jeffrey, and I didn't, you know, I mean, I could have, I had enough. My aunt got them. But like my mom, she sews very fast. And while I'm in labor with Joey and with Eddie, she was there with a couple of hours, you know, and within a few minutes she made a nightshirt for him, or a nightgown, you know, and all with her hand. She just says, you run up and get a yard of flannel, no more now, 1 yard of flannel, and come right back down. And she has an old, well, I always have old sheets, you know, I always keep my old sheets, or maybe some, even the baby, like you think what we do with our other baby's clothes.
Yes.
What did I do with Troy's clothes before? Then I could have passed them on to the next one. They don't believe in this.
Oh, they don't.
Oh, really?
They think that the baby clothes, well, don't keep it even. Well, they say nothing, you see, absolutely. So don't
have
even
nothing keep ready.
Nothing ready, and don't even have the clothes for it.
Well,
so most of the time when the baby outgrows their clothes, the Eskimos are very generous to each other. They say, I got some of my baby's clothes, and some of them, you know, they... You see some, well, I'm this way, I see some children and they're in need of clothes and they're not dressed very good, you know. And I see that they need clothes for it. And even if they still fit my baby very well, I say, so I don't hurt their pride. I says, I got some old clothes at home. They're not real old, I says, but they've been used and they're small for my baby, so you can have them if
rather
you come up.
Pass them on to your next.
Yeah. Well, rather than pass them on to my next, that's right, we pass them on to another child that may need them.
Could this be true for 2 or 3 year old also?
Even for that.
You mean you wouldn't pass your
you mean, oh, no. But if I had a 3 year old for my youngest daughter, like now, Tracy's clothes, I wouldn't, well, she's got a whole lot of clothes. And I give them away, but I get more for her, and I give them away. But I never, in the first years with my 2 older children, I got nothing but the best for them, everything new. But then later I learned you can't always do this when you got a big family, you can hardly afford a pair of shoes.
Mm.
So I've learned to go to cheaper sales, or learn to make them use their other clothes, you know. But like the school children, I let them have maybe 2 sets of good school clothing, and then when they get home they get out of them and they can get into old play clothes. And but most of my children's clothing, they can use them for another year or so, but I always let them pass it on to another child. I see that doesn't have too many, and the children often say, poor Marshall's got no clothes very much, Ma. So I pass something on to him, and I think my children are very generous because my children know how to share their things. I've seen a lot of families that won't share one thing with their brother or their sister, let alone anybody else. You know, they don't know how to share. But my children will have a little bag of candy, and even if they by the time they finished giving every child candy and they had nothing left for themselves, they're happy. They says, gee, I have nothing, but that's okay, mommy, I'll get some more later. You know, they're this way. I brought them up to share, and they feel the same way with their clothes. Eddie can say, Joey, my shirt has got no button on it. Can I use yours? I can fold the sleeves. It's a little long for me. Joey says, sure, you can use that.
Let me ask you something. People, we have noticed some families where the adults are all very nicely dressed and right on down.
Yeah.
All of the night, until you get to the real little ones,
mm-hmm.
let's say up to about school age,
mm-hmm.
and most anything.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if it's clean, dirty, torn,
mm-hmm.
anything. And, you know, we wonder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I don't know. Supposed to have children grow older, they get conscious of their clothes. You know, my son Jeffrey, he's got about 8 pair of pants in his drawer, and he's using the same ones over, and I notice he washed them a couple of times. I says, Jeffrey, I says, could you pull all your pants out of that drawer? I was good and mad at him, and he pulled them all out. I says, listen, you're almost 14 years old and you should know to dress better when you're going to school. I says, why do you keep using those? And you take them off at night, wash them, and then put them on in the morning, ironed. I've noticed you do this. He says, the other ones are, the legs are a little too wide. And I could hardly get my arms through some of them.
Yeah.
And, he's that way. But they get very conscious of their clothes. Maybe that's why they have to. Their children insist their parents have to dress them better
mm-hmm.
as they grow older, or else they will not go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is what they happen. But my children have never been, you know. Well, I try my very best to dress mine.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't cost. It doesn't matter if they cost me money to buy their clothing. Well, I dress poor myself before my school children were to dress poor. I mean, they're not dressed richly, but they're dressed decently. And Ricky and Troy. Ricky's all right, he can keep clothes on, and my daughter doesn't like to go out, but she's gonna be like Lisbeth. She likes to run around without shoes on. She runs in that ground barefooted, and I put them on her and she's got them off. But Troy, he goes out and he comes back in with no pants on. Where's your pants? Out there. I says, why don't you put them on? Hot, he says. But I notice a lot of native children, well, my aunt's children were never like that, the older ones, but now her granddaughter and her youngest son, they just go with little vests, little inside vests. A lot of natives are this way. They don't care to dress the younger ones. I don't know why. Maybe they can't afford the clothes, but I don't know. This is something else about a lot of people. I got a girlfriend like this. They dress very nicely. Very nice. They got a real nice Wolverine trim and real nice parka, and you know.
Mm-hmm.
You see them uptown, they're spotless. They're just clean. And yet they don't have food. They're getting rationed, or maybe they're just hardly skimping along. They're real poor. They got no money for food. And yet they can sit in a bingo game or they can sit in a bar. They like to be seen well-dressed. You know, it's just their appearance. And yet, if you went in their homes, well, they got nothing, but hardly anything to live on. I've told my auntie a few times, why don't you, she says, I get so tired of going to that laundry. I says, why don't you make a deal with the babe? You know, they're very easy to make a deal with. I says, all your family allowance, you're only using it for waste. I says, you know, if you made a deal with the babe, you gave them your family allowance, and you says, you just sign a little paper, agreement of sale paper that says I promise to pay this every 20th or so. I says, and every month you give him your family allowance until you got your washing machine
mm-hmm.
paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Tell them, why don't you do this? Nah, we don't need to. We could do it with our hands. You know? know, they, I don't know why some people, maybe they don't want to have the load of dead on their mind, but still, I mean, wouldn't it be, I got most of my stuff this way, and a little money I get, I put it on the side, like now I like to put something on the side for a new Chesterfield. I would have got one, but they have none in the bay, probably by the boat.
How about the new baby's washing? Do you use any oil on a newborn baby or anything special on a newborn baby?
I forgot I was going to tell you about how the baby, the navel, after the baby is born, they use cord. Well, not, what would you say?
Sinew?
Yeah, I think a lot of them would use sinew, but when mine was born, my father-in-law used size 10. With all my babies that's born at home, they had something. They don't like this nylon thread because it's so strong, it cuts through, you know, and it's sharp. And I always have galantine. I always have galantine. You know, it's some sort of twine that's not nylon. They used to have this mostly for sewing leather all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that used to be the strongest thread. And I always have this. I like this much better than the nylon thread myself. I always have this in the box. Like I was saying, that I always manage to sneak an old sheet or something inside the box or something, and then my mom, you know, when it's born, and I tell my mom where to find it. And she said, oh, you did keep something after all. No, no, I says, I didn't want to throw that away because I thought I could use it sometime yet. All right, well, that's okay, she says. And then she tied a cord. They have some natives use thread, like size 10, you know, they double it a few times, nylon or
cotton
thread, strong cotton thread. And then they told me not to have anything ready. I mean, I was this way all the time. So when Lorna was born, I had no powder, no oil, no soap. I mean, I had face soap, but no baby soap. And she was born unexpectedly. So I had absolutely nothing, not even one little shirt. I had a lot of clean towels. So I told Colin, you get that big bath towel out of that suit, that trunk there. And, you know, I wrapped her in this. I don't know if I told you if when Lorna was born, you know, I had her. Anyway, I had Lorna. And I was so sure always it's going to be a girl that when I had her, I didn't realize what I was doing. I mean, I knew. I never got out of my head. I was so excited that I should have a baby with 2 hours and 20 minutes after the first labor. And then my father-in-law says, you get that body back of yours on the bed, he says, you lay down. And you know, here I was sitting up and I'm holding this baby, just born, and I'm patting her, and I never knew about afterbirth. That's another thing. We don't know about it when the babies are born in hospital. I mean, you know, I know they did something, but they didn't explain it to me in the hospital. And you know, you hardly know anything when you're half years in the hospital because they didn't explain nothing. And then, you know, he says, look, the afterbirth is not even born. They're real scared of it. It's not even born in your hold. I was puzzled, thinking, well, why?
But the cord was
on. Well, that's what I was puzzled about. I thought, why is this cord still in? You know? But she was screaming so hard and there was water all over there, so I picked her up and I was padding. and then I realized. So I laid back very slowly and my father-in-law laid the baby down. He tied it just roughly, just shaking my father-in-law. He, you know, he was used to this all the time, but he never delivered a baby for a long time, and he didn't. He was outside, and I had it all by myself. When Colin heard the baby scream, then he called his dad, and his dad came in, and then he cut the cord just roughly, and you know, never let the cord go. He says, you're just starting a family now, so you'll probably have a lot of times when you want to have your baby at home, or I think you should have your babies at home. He thinks that we should have our babies at home all the time. It's better, he says. You don't get all those needles jabbed into you and make you sick. And then you just have it by nature, naturally, natural childbirth at home, and that's the best, he says. So, and then he is telling us, and in future years, if you should have a baby, he says, and you cut the cord, don't just leave it there. It'll go back in you, he says, if you just leave it. So you must always take the cord, tie one side of the on the baby side, and then tie. They also believe that if you cut the cord, well, the babies, you know, you always have to tie it before you cut it. The natives believe you have to tie it two places. You have to cut the, tie it by the cord and tie it a little further and then cut in between. They think that the mother will bleed inside. And then when you tie the cord that's still in the mother, you don't cut it right at the end, the thread rather. You have it long, and then you know you... when there's only one person alone and he's not there to watch by. My mother made me do this. They didn't do this with Lorna to me. They say that you tie it around their leg. I tied this string around my mother's leg. This is the instruction she gave me. Yeah, or anywhere, you know, just tie it. So if it goes back in, then it's still hanging by the cord anyway. And probably maybe you could pull it. But I don't know. But this is something they believe. You're not supposed to let go of that cord. But my mother had a really easy way of herself. She just made herself sneeze and then the afterbirth would be born. She always did this, she said. Mm-hmm. Or bite her thumb real hard, she says.
Bite your thumb? Why?
I don't know. She says, bite your thumb and give a push or a little push or something, she says. Mm. But I never seen her biting her thumb. I seen her sneeze, though. She make herself sneeze. But then anyway, my father-in-law had his hand there and I says, and then I got really scared. Now I know why that cord was still in me. There's another baby there. I says, is that another baby, Dad? No, he says, that's the afterbirth. And anyway, I didn't have to even push on this, you know, he kind of sort of pushed it himself along. It didn't hurt. But then he started telling me, from now on, if you ever have a baby, never touch it until after the after birth is out. Don't ever move till after the birth is out. I says, why? And then he told me it can go back in you and get hard and be dangerous. And he said he had cases where he have to. This one woman, it got so hard on her, Mrs. Carpenter, the one that died, that he had to... And he said he just tore his pants in, you know, just fought her stomach like this, like he's squashing something up. He had to do this to her and let it out by pieces. Mm. And but this is why he said they're scared of this. I know they're very afraid of the afterbirth. And they say that it can grow and get teeth in it, and then it'll, I don't know what it'll do if it gets teeth, but this I heard them. I never heard him really explain what it would do, but I heard him say, he would neglect it. That means it grows teeth on it. And then when, you see, we had no powder or anything now. When, after everything was all settled, they put the baby beside me, and then I took, I refixed this cord, and I